Good evening. I'd like to call the January 19th Board of Supervisors meeting for Stanislaus County to order. And in an unusual and enjoyable sense, tonight we have a special presentation by the Stanislaus Military Academy Color Guard, and they'll lead us in a presentation of the flag and the flag salute. So, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. You can be seated. We have with us tonight for a presentation on the Stanislaus Military Academy our Stanislaus County Superintendent of Schools, Tom Chang-Yong.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the Board of Supervisors. It's with indeed great pleasure that I'm here tonight to just share a few things about the Stanislaus Military Academy. We've left you with a few information pieces for you to look, but I think one of the pictures that really helps explain things is a 5-minute video that we put together recently regarding Stanislaus Military Academy. So please enjoy the video.
The mission of SMA is to help our cadets develop morally, academically, physically, and spiritually so that they are ready to succeed as adults in college and in life. Not all students flourish in a traditional school setting. The new Stanislaus Military Academy, SMA, which opened in the fall of 2009, provides additional opportunities for students to succeed. Open to any student enrolled in an alternative education program operated by the Stanislaus County Office of Education, the goal of the academy is to train student cadets for successful living. We believe that today's young people are tomorrow's future leaders, that young people are the country's most important commodity. We believe that it is our responsibility to provide educational opportunities, activities, and an atmosphere which will encourage students to seek an even higher level of integrity, discipline, self-reliance, good citizenship, and patriotism.
I feel it's very important that the students understand their role in society, that they have certain responsibilities that they need to adhere to, and that is that they contribute and give back to society in the way of volunteering, giving service to others. And I think this program, because it does stress discipline, commitment, being a person of integrity, I think this helps young people realize that in the big picture of society, it helps them realize what their role is and that they can go out and be a productive citizen in their community.
SMA, I have learned discipline, humility, and respect. And most of all, honor, make me become a better person, and learn many things that I never knew about. If it wasn't for this academy, I'd probably be in the streets, most likely in Julia.
He used to get into fights all the time, suspensions, oh, it was terrible. I felt like there was no doors open for me, I didn't know what to do, I was frustrated at the same time, I don't know if it was getting to him also. So when I heard about the military, I told right away, I did the paperwork for the same thing. He goes, what am I going to do? What is this? This and that. He just didn't want to understand. He didn't want to see anything. And the second day, I picked him up from this program. He's gone. Mom, thank you. I like this. I like this. I got kicked out of church in high school, guys. So I came over here. You know, they told me about the program and I was trying to. My dad, he saw a big difference in my behavior. When he came home, I just put on my uniform and showed him and he wanted to cry. So he was like really sad.
My dad was a big chill. I've always admired the way he carried himself. I looked up to him and I heard there was going to be a military academy at John Ballard and it just intrigued me. I just wanted to join and see what I could do.
We have an opportunity to sow seeds of servant leadership here. This world is filled with opportunity to sow some bad seed. These kids live in environments and in neighborhoods and in circumstances where bad seed piles around them all day long. We don't spend a lot of time breaking cadets down. We can't compete with the world in that department. The world has done a better job than that than we could ever hope to do. It's tough. It's a tough program. A lot of drill and ceremony, a lot of physical training, and first aid is very important and very important. Survival and map reading and all those military things. And then the academic instructor takes charge, so we get all the academics covered. In many cases, it's the first time they've ever actually accomplished something. And it's a pretty emotional time. It means a lot to these kids, and suddenly they're established.
My son is getting a lot of honesty. Respectful. And I'm saying it from my heart. I am so happy with this academy because for this school, I had a lot of support. And I have it. And it's the world also put it, and we'll always have support.
We believe that we are concerned about the whole person, what they experience 24 hours a day, not just during the class period cadets are with SMA.
We are so excited about the enthusiasm of the cadets that are in the program and the interest from other students. And I firmly believe that young people want to belong to something that they can connect with, either at school with friends or as part of a band or an athletic team. And this academy allows young people the option, the opportunity to connect with other students that help bring some structure to their life, and they know the end results of this is going to help prepare them for a better future.
Hi, I just wanted to make a few comments. This school began in concept a year ago. We met with some military individuals who came on board as a military cadre, many volunteers that wanted to be part of this project, and we started this school in August of this year with just a handful of cadets because they were asked to make a major lifestyle change. And when they went to a boot camp that we'd put together for them and they came back, and I'm a real believer in miracles, a miracle changed these young people into fine, outstanding young citizens, and we're very proud of the cadets. With a handful that we started with, we are now boast a third classroom that started. We have over 64 cadets that have grown from just 17 that started this program. Word is spread, and calls daily come in from parents and students that are asking information about this. And I recently was talking to a young lady, a senior, at one of our local high schools, and said, I almost went to that SMA school of yours. And I said, I'm not sure what she was talking about. I said, you know, the military school. And I said, really, why would you want to go there? You're near graduation. And Sarah said, because I want discipline in my life, and I don't have it at this school. Here's a 17-year-old young lady saying that. We know there's a need for not everyone, but for some young people that they would like this in their life, and we're providing it for them. Don't get me wrong. We are not a military recruiter. We want to provide these young people with structure and discipline so that they will be confident and successful in their life, whatever their future endeavors take them. I would like to, first of all, recognize a person that has been a very instrumental in the success of this program. It's our liaison from the education piece to the military side, and that's Mr. Fred Bigler. Fred, would you please stand and be recognized. Thank you, Fred. And also, without the support of our board, the County Board of Education, we wouldn't have the success that we enjoy with that. So our board president took time to be here tonight, too, and that's Mr. Luis Molina. Now, I would like to ask Drill Sergeant Hancock to come forward and introduce to you these fine young cadets. Drill Sergeant Hancock?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'd like to first thank you guys for allowing us to present the colors. It was an honor. When I told them on Friday that we were going to be doing that, they were excited. So I know they want to thank you, but I'll start off by thanking you. Also, I'd like to thank Mr. Chagnon for his vision. When I left the Marine Corps, you know, it was a hard decision. I served 5 years, and I'll share with you guys a famous quote. There was a quote that said, many people go through life not knowing if they made a difference, but Marines don't have that problem. And I felt that, I truly felt that when I was in the Marine Corps. And getting out, I thought it was going to be hard. I knew I wanted to teach. I knew I wanted to help students. But I knew serving my country, you know, was something that was bigger than myself. But being a part of this program, being able to help these kids, a lot of them, you know, tough stories, you know, growing up, you know, drugs, gangs, you know, family problems, being a part of this, helping to be able to mold their lives and what they give back to me, I mean, it's comparable to the feeling I felt in the Marine Corps. I'll start off by introducing Cadet Parmley. I'll let her say a few words.
Good evening. I'm Cadet Parmley.
Just pull that down below your chin, please.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Cadet Parmley. I'm a senior at SMA. I was recently promoted to adjutant first year, and my goals are to join the Air Force. And, yeah, thank you.
All right, next up is Cadet Davis.
Hello, my name is Cadet Davis. I hold the rank of TSC Private First Class. I'm a junior, and I hold the position of a squad leader. Thank you for giving me this opportunity for presenting colors to you guys.
Our Cadet Ross.
Good evening. My name is Cadet Ross. I am a platoon sergeant at SMA. I would like to thank our drill sergeants and our captain for giving me an opportunity for this. I used to belong to a very popular gang, which I'm no longer affiliated with. Thank you.
Hi, Cadet Rufo.
My name is Cadet Rufo. I am a junior at Stanislaus Military Academy, and I hold the rank of a PFC, and also I'm the first captain of the Corps of Cadets at Stanislaus Military Academy. My goals for after high school are to join the United States Marine Corps, and that's pretty much it. Thank you guys very much.
Cadet Molina.
Good evening. My name is Cadet Molina. I hold the rank of Sergeant at Arms. My goal from when I graduated off high school to join the Marine Corps too. I also was in gangs. I'm happy I'm not affiliated with them anymore. Thank you.
And last is Cadet Dickens.
Good evening. I'm Cadet Dickens. I have the rank of Private E2, but I hold the position of the squad leader, and I'd just like to thank everybody, Drill Sergeant, Mr. Chagnon, everybody for letting me have this opportunity to be in the school. That's it.
In your packet, you have an article that was recently published in the Modesto Bee, and it shows a a challenge coin that was issued to the cadets by our Sheriff Adam Christensen. Adam has been out to the program on numerous occasions, and he is a significant supporter of the program. He lets me know that this program has freed up countless hours by his men because they can work on other activities besides patrolling some of the juvenile activities. So I want to recognize and thank Adam Christensen for the work that he has done in coordinating our efforts with SMA. You heard some of the stories of these young cadets, and I can tell you that in my almost 40 years in education, this is one of the highlights of my educational career, because we're changing lives for the better. We're changing individual lives, we're changing families, and that ripples out into the communities, and we're making stronger communities. And it's just with a great deal of honor that I'm affiliated with this program. I want to thank the drill sergeant for being here tonight and the cadets. And the popularity of this program is growing, and we certainly would entertain questions from any of the Board of Supervisors, and we thank you deeply for allowing us to present the colors tonight and to share our program with you. Thank you very much.
Any comments from the board?
Yes, please. I want to congratulate you. I've had an opportunity to talk to one of the young men in this program. And as he pointed out to me, in his efforts of going up, he's run into various difficulties, and this program has helped him immensely. He also stated that to begin with, some of his friends would say, why in the world do you want to go on with all that discipline? But now his friends are asking, how do I get into this program? So I know that you are being successful, and congratulations.
Supervisor Keita.
I just wanted to say that it's definitely an honor to have you here as cadets. The county's proud of you, I can tell you that, and to SCOE and to the Sheriff's Department, all of everyone that's involved, I really appreciate it. Great job, guys.
Well, Mr. Changyan, Sergeant, and cadets, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and for serving us and leading this community and salute to our flag. Thank you. We have an opportunity at this time in the meeting for public comment for anyone that would like to speak to the board or the community regarding something that's not on the agenda. Is there anyone here for the public comment? Okay, I don't see anyone, so we'll move then to item 5, the consent calendar. We've had a request to remove item B3 from that consent calendar, and we'll do that and hear it in its regular order in the agenda. Is there anyone else that, or any other agenda items that someone would like to remove from the consent calendar? If not, we'll entertain a motion for approval of the calendar.
So moved. Second.
Motion Supervisor Keita, second Supervisor DeMartini. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0. I'm going to take the opportunity at this point to move item 10A up. We've had a request from the League of California Cities to hear this item, and that they were on a tight time frame for this evening. So the item is the request to adopt a resolution supporting the local taxpayer Public Safety and Transportation Protection Act of 2010. Mr. Robinson.
Yes, thank you very much. This is a very exciting opportunity to speak to this issue. As you know, in local government, and I've been involved in local government for almost 30 years, we have struggled continuously and constantly to protect local resources, and it's been a struggle that has seen us lose ground year over year, and particularly over the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen some significant deterioration in our ability to retain local resources to meet the needs of our local community. The resolution you have before you is a resolution supporting the Local Taxpayer Public Safety and Transportation Protection Act of 2010. Stephen Qualls is standing at the podium. I'll give him a moment to speak to the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving this up, this item up. I appreciate it. And thank you, Board of Supervisors and staff. As you all know, the California voters have repeatedly and overwhelmingly voted to protect local government funds from state raids and ensure that gas taxes we pay at the pump stay local to fund transportation improvements. In 2004, the voters of California, after seeing the state continuously take property taxes for purposes they were not intended, passed Prop 1A by an overwhelming 84%. That's the largest margin of victory ever for a state ballot measure. In 2006, seeing that the state continued to take our gas taxes and use them for purposes other than transportation, they voted and passed Prop 1A again by 74%. But despite these voter mandates, the legislature in Sacramento keeps finding ways to raid, borrow, transfer, shift, or otherwise steal local government and transportation funding. Last year, the state legislature threatened to take billions of dollars more in gas taxes. They borrowed over $2 billion in local property taxes without any means of paying that back. And this despite a court decision saying the earlier attempt to take $350 million in redevelopment funds was unconstitutional. They shifted over $910 million in transit funding away from local transit agencies. They voted to take more than $1 billion of local government share of the highway user's tax in order to pay down the state bond debt. Luckily, this measure stalled in the assembly. They tried to eliminate the state sales tax on gasoline and highway user's funds and replace them with a gasoline fee. And this would have meant there would have been no constitutional protections as there are now under Prop 42 and Prop 1A. The governor ultimately vetoed this measure. But this year's budget, the governor has proposed doing almost the same thing. If the state takes the highway users tax money, Stanislaus County would lose over $7.8 million. If they were to take your redevelopment funds, you would lose over $500 million. This is not including the money for the city of Ceres. The state already takes over $16 million a year through the ERAP shift. They've taken over $518 million since these shifts began. So because of these constant threats and actions by the state, the California League of Board of Directors, the California Alliance for Jobs, the California Transportation Association voted to file the Local Taxpayer Public Safety and Transportation Protection Act of 2010. Our initiative will prohibit the state from taking, borrowing, or redirecting local taxpayer funds, funds that are dedicated to public safety, emergency response, and vital local government services. It will protect vital dedicated transportation and public transit funds. Will prevent the state from taking, borrowing, or redirecting the state sales tax on Prop 42 and highway users tax. These are funds that are dedicated to transportation maintenance and improvements, as well as prevent the state from redirecting or taking your public transit funds. It will also prevent the state from taking your city's redevelopment funds, the county's. We must remember that the California Redevelopment Association loses the lawsuit, the state will likely take more money and will continue to take it for years to come. And if the state loses that court case, then they're going to be looking to make up that $2 billion somewhere else. We already have a projected $21 billion deficit, but if you add the $2 billion from this and the other funds, such as the prison guards have to pay back, we're looking at close to $24 billion. The state considers local funds as low-lying fruit. And our measure is retroactive. So any actions the state takes between October 2009 and November 2010 will be null and void, and they'll have to pay the funds back. We need 750,000 signatures to qualify us for the ballot, but we need 1.2 million because of the validity rate. So I come before you to ask you not only to pass the resolution, but you'll find a packet in front of you which contains petitions, registration forms, and pledges. I'm asking you to pledge to gather 100 signatures and gather $100 toward the campaign effort. I'm asking any other group or individuals in this room who are watching on TV who would like to join us to please join us. I have more packs available where you can contact me. We can also log on to our website, saveyourlocalservices.com. With that, I'm here to answer any questions. I want to thank you again for allowing me to speak before you tonight. Supervisor O'Brien.
Mr. Qualls, back in 2004, CSAC and the League spent a whole lot of our dues, a lot of our money, in Prop 1A battle, which was going to protect our local dollars. What's this do that's different from 1A, and why didn't we think of it back in 2004?
In 2004, we started off with Prop 65, and the polling was very low on that. And so we switched to Prop 1A, and what we had to do is, as you may know, the state under Prop 1A is allowed to borrow the local government property taxes. They have to be paid back within 3 years. They can only be borrowed twice in 10 years. They have to be paid back with interest, which is what they did this year. But
that's out, and I wasn't here in those in at that time, just so I understand. At that time, we could not have gotten this passed without the legislature and the governor's support if we had not put that caveat in there to allow them to borrow it. We did not expect them to ever use that. It's only supposed to be used during dire economic situations. So we did not believe that situation ever come about. Now those funds are constitutionally protected. This is the best that we can do. Our lawyers have gone over it. We find out that all these funds, also the higher users tax money, is allowed to be borrowed also. Now those funds will no longer be allowed to be borrowed. The governor, when Prop 1A first was proposed, in his own literature and publicly stated that redevelopment funds did not need to be placed in there because they were protected under the state constitution. Then last year they did just that.
But there's a will, there's a way. Sacramento will continue to take local funds, whether there's this proposition or any other proposition. We've seen that with 1A. And, you know, of course, I will support any proposition, but in reality, where there's a will, there's a way. And they will find a legal or illegal way of taking our money.
Appreciate your comments. I understand.
Supervisor Monteith.
A couple of years ago, they passed a bill up there where they could, money that they couldn't touch, they could use for collateral. Does this address that?
No, it does not.
Okay. Because there isn't any money they can't touch now. And using it for collateral, there's no limitations if they happen to... can you spend the money if you put it up for collateral? So that's another avenue that they have right now that should be addressed also. Well, thank you for answering.
Thank you. Supervisor Chiesa.
And Mr. Qualls, there are, I think, three different ballot measures going up, similar in some ways. How is this one different from the other two? And I know you're more familiar with them than I am.
And the only one that's actually similar to ours is California Ford's measure, and theirs does not protect highway users tax, redevelopment money. It's also not retroactive. So if the state decides between now and November that this movement is gaining momentum and they think it's going to pass, they can go ahead and take these funds and they would be lost forever. But the other one you're speaking about is Repair California. That actually has more to do with governance. And this does actually fall under governance if you look at it because it moves the local control back to local government where it's supposed to be, where you are accountable. You're the ones who have to meet with the voters. You're the ones who see them in the supermarkets. You're the ones who have to answer when you have to make the cuts because the general fund monies are being taken. So actually, this is a form of governance reform in that it moves everything more locally and hopefully keeps the funds and control local where they belong.
I wish you luck, and I tend to agree with my fellow supervisors that they're going to continue stealing until the people are not enough.
Okay, thank you for your comments.
Thank you very much, Kenneth, for allowing me.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would care to comment on this issue? If not, then we'll bring it back. Mr. Robinson, do you have a staff recommendation for us?
Yeah, staff recommendation would be to approve the resolution supporting the local taxpayer public safety and Transportation Protection Act of 2010. Which does include a provision to for Stanislaus County to be listed as a supporter of the initiative.
Okay. Is the chair will entertain any action.
So moved.
Have a motion.
And second then.
Motion and second. Supervisor Monteith on the motion. Supervisor DeMartini on the second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Have a good evening. We'll move then to item 6B3, which is approval of a request to sponsor a bill to authorize an increase in fees for certified copies of certain vital records up to a maximum of $2 allocated for the purpose of Family Justice Center related services. Mr. Robinson.
Yes, I would. The main reason that this item was pulled was for some additional discussion relative to concerns expressed by Ms. Lundgren relative to the proposed fee, and I would, if she wouldn't mind, ask her to come and express her position and the position of the County Clerk and Recorders Association.
Thank you. Lee Lundgren, Stanislaus County Clerk, Recorder, and Registrar of Voters. Good evening to all this evening. Although we completely support the Family Justice Center model, It is the source of funding for which I have to respectfully disagree. The source of funding is looked at this point in time to come directly from fees that would be generated by vital actions from the clerk recorder's office. Specifically, additional $2 tacked onto every marriage certificate copy, birth certificate, fetal death record, and death record. Now, you might ask, what is the connection between a death record or a birth certificate and the Family Justice Center? And I would have to say, I see none. Nor do the other members of the California County Recorder Association, which in all of the 58 counties as a group disagree with taking of funds that mandate fees that come from those which are supposed to be there to preserve, to maintain, and to provide official and vital records for our community. So we're using this as a source that's very unfortunate to be taken and be used in a circumstance that has been following several other actions like this over the years. As an association and as your recorder, I would have to disagree with this type of funding coming from this specific area. This is the only individual way these people can get these certified copies. And taking them from additional costs just make it that much more burdensome on that which we have for our people in society. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Ms. Lundgren? Okay, I don't see any at this point.
Thank you.
Maybe you could stay close in case one comes up.
Okay.
Ms. Shipley, would you care to address the board?
Good evening, Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Dearing. Carol Shipley, Assistant District Attorney. I would like to answer Ms. Lundgren's question is, what is the correlation? And I'd like to do that, the correlation between the fees and the Family Justice Center, I'd like to do that by reading from Assembly Bill 773, which was chaptered in 2008, in which the Alameda County District Attorney's Office, or Alameda County and Solano County Board of Supervisors both requested the legislation be passed specifically for this, and were successful in getting it. According to this legislation, the 2005 California Women's Health Survey in California, 9.2% of women live in homes where domestic abuse occurs. Domestic violence is ubiquitous and cuts across all economic and education levels and all age groups, ethnicities, and other social and community characteristics. According to 2006 statistics from the Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics, in nearly half of violent crimes where the victim and the aggressor are related, the aggressor is either the spouse or ex-spouse of the victim. Marriage license fees collected pursuant to this act would help communities intervene and prevent domestic violence when the aggressor is the spouse or ex-spouse of the victim. According to the National Women Abuse Prevention Project in Washington, D.C., domestic violence puts children at risk. Children born into families where domestic violence occurs are physically abused or seriously neglected at a rate that is significantly higher than the national average in the general population. Birth certificate fees collected pursuant to this act would help communities with the cost of ensuring that children who are born into families with domestic violence receive the help they need. Studies show that more than 10% of women are victims of domestic violence during pregnancy. According to a January 2009 study published in The Lancet, a British medical journal, pregnant women who are assaulted by their spouses are 50% more likely to experience fetal loss, often repeatedly, than women who are not abused during pregnancy. Women who are battered during pregnancy are also more likely to die or have children who are born prematurely with low birth weights and intense medical needs. Fetal death certificate fees would help communities with what it costs to ensure that pregnant women with violent spouses receive help, protection, and care for their unborn children and infants. As you know, we've been working very hard to establish a Family Justice Center here in Stanislaus County, one that would co-locate the services for domestic violence victims, sexual assault, child abuse, and elder abuse victims. We believe that this raising of the $2 for the copies of vital statistic records would be is perfectly aligned with the Family Justice Center, just as I stated under the legislation of AB 73. We believe that it's not taking from any county department, it's not taking from the general fund, it's not taking its new money that we're asking to become from the $2 raise in the fee of the copies of vital statistics. I have with me to a member of the Stanislaus Family Justice Center Foundation, Marlene Gonzalez, who would like to say a few words as well.
Good evening. I'm Marlene Gonzalez, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Stanislaus County Family Justice Center Foundation Board, representing our board president, Lisa Montero Moore. The Family Justice Center will offer our community an incredible resource to co-locate the services provided to victims and their families of domestic violence. Our foundation has received public and private funding to provide this much-needed service to our community. The ability to receive this additional funding will only enhance the services offered to victims of domestic violence. This has been successful in other communities such as San Diego, Alameda, and Solano counties. Stanislaus County is the forefront of this programming. It is anticipated that the center and its work will decrease the occurrence of violence and likely decrease the costs associated with law enforcement in the future. Our foundation is requesting the support of our Board of Supervisors, as this action will advance a much-needed service in Stanislaus County. Thank you.
Thank you.
And one of our strongest supporters in the community would also like to speak at this time, Sue Foster.
Good evening. I'm very glad that I'm able to be here and speak for the Family Justice Center. First of all, I'd like to thank Supervisor Grover, Supervisor O'Brien, and CEO Robinson for their mentoring and their help in this process. They have helped us so much be more effective in our planning, and I just want to take a moment to thank you guys for that. It's been very, very helpful. I represent the private sector. I heard Birgit first cast this dream about the Family Justice Center. And it's so needed in our community, and it's been so successful in other communities. And I see the correlation between the vital statistics fee and families. And what we're trying to do in our community is support families and support all of the county agencies that intervene in their behalf. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. And we certainly hope that you will approve this increase. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the board?
Supervisor DeMartini.
Yeah, I got a question, the funding of this myself. You know, what would be the purpose of taxing somebody for death records to put into this organization? There's no correlation between this. It's like taxing the high-income people for the mental health department or taxing smokers for children's program. I it appears to me that this tax is on one person for a whole different problem.
Well,
I don't see how you can justify that.
As I had read earlier, unfortunately, domestic violence is one of those crimes that can lead to death through homicide, as well as when the pregnant women are beaten, their fetus also either is killed or comes out with multiple problems. So the death certificate would align in those cases.
Okay, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, but I can accept that.
Shipley, excuse me, were you finished?
No, it's. I think I've got the answer I was expecting, but I'm still not satisfied with it. We have too many times in this country we were taxing one person to give to somebody else. And proposition for high income people for mental health departments, I don't know, was that 63? three or so. That's a good example of what not to do. I can see something for perhaps marriage certificates or something into this. I think we do that already. But I think when you go into death certificates and other things to put money into this organization, that's going just a little bit too far.
Supervisor Chiesa.
I know we've been talking about this Family Justice Center on the Prop 10 Commission, obviously. And I guess for me, I'd like to see, because we keep talking about a business model, I've seen something of a business model, but now we're talking about taxing. I'm not speaking for or against this tax specifically, but you start collecting money, and if the Family Justice Center doesn't get off the ground because of a lack of funding either from Prop 10 or donors, then what? I mean, what? I know you need something, some impetus to get it started, and we've been talking about that, but don't we need a business model to go along with how this is going to succeed if we're going to start charging off? I mean, wouldn't that be a smarter start?
I understand your point, very valid. We had a foundation meeting today. You may or may not know that we are, the Family Justice Center will be funded strictly through a 501c3. And as such, that foundation board voted today to proceed with negotiations on a lease. So we anticipate being open very shortly. So as far as wanting to know if there's a business model, I believe you will see that and hopefully in the next 3 to 4 months. But as far as right now, I don't have it open. If it doesn't open, I can't answer your question. I can only say that I've been working too hard not to get this open.
And I know you've been, and I commend you for it, because I think there's going to be a great purpose for the Family Justice Center. I have to, in order to pass this, in order for me to buy into this, it would be nice to see that it is going to be viable from a 501c3 standpoint. And I haven't seen that yet, although... Okay. Bill looks like he can answer.
Maybe after Supervisor O'Brien and I have a chance to talk a little bit, it may be helpful.
That would be great.
Supervisor O'Brien.
But let me jump in on that first before my other comments. While there may not be a written business plan, there are a financial plan in place that puts us into the first 5 years of being funded and open. After those 5 years, then we'll see, you know, where it goes and what it takes off. But if my understanding is right, this authorizes Stanislaus County to collect $2, but it would still be up to us to collect the $2. Is that a correct statement?
I think that's an accurate characterization. If the program didn't exist for which the funds were intended, then the fee would revert to the lower amount, I believe. Yeah.
Whether we want to admit it or not, domestic abuse exists in this county, and it is a serious problem. It's easy to put our heads in the sand and say, it's really not an issue, but it really is an issue. Of course, in these budget times, we don't like to increase fees on anything, but reality is government is struggling, and we need dollars, and we need this program. This program will protect the family unit. This program will protect people, and we need the program. So I'm in full support of asking our legislature to move forward with authorizing us to allow us to collect $2.
And you get through it. Okay. I might just recap a little bit of history on where we're at. And I can understand the feeling that maybe we have a cart before a horse here, but I think I can explain it. This concept of a Family Justice Center has been floating around to primarily the safety Public Safety Committee for close to 3 years now, probably. Supervisor O'Brien and I sat on that, and most of the folks involved in law enforcement also. And our response to each time we had a presentation, which is about every 6 months when we meet, was, sounds like a wonderful idea, but this is really not the right time for government to be talking about another set of services or services in a different way that could in any way cost us more money to provide. And as time went along, we kept saying we're interested, but we need a way to bring all the services we currently have together and
outside money to pay for it. And what is different now than those 2 or 3 years that we talked about it, was a group came together, and Mrs. Foster has a good heart, but she's not here just because she has a good heart. Her and her family stepped up, committed money to the project, and actually talked to other families to commit money over a long period of time, a significant amount. And that's what kind of catalyzed us to go down this road. And we have spent considerable time with this foundation group looking at their cash flows, the projected revenues and expenses, and how we would staff something like this, with the whole idea that not the county or the city of Modesto or the city of Ceres would spend any more money on these services that are provided than we are right now. It would just present it in a different format. And the only commitment we needed was that government would assign their folks to that building rather than in the 8 or 10 different offices that currently a victim of crime needs to go to. But what we also wanted to make sure that they knew is that this organization is an organization of a private foundation. It's not a government organization. So if there's a lease responsibility, if there's an ongoing tail that we can't foresee to this organization not being able to continue, it's not the county's responsibility to prop it up and keep it going. So that's probably the reason that we haven't had a request from staff to bring to us to approve this, because we made it really clear that if you get the organization up and going with a business plan that works for us, we're willing to contract with you in order to provide those services that we do anyhow. What we're asking for here is to start the ball rolling on a funding source that was only a small portion of a funding source that several other counties in the state have already done for the exact same thing. And we're trying to model our system on systems like San Diego County and Alameda County that are currently working. In addition, we also are going to ask the federal government, who has showed interest in these kind of things and have helped fund other family justice centers, to be a part of this also. So it's a combination of federal government, private foundation, and private family money that would be going in to make this successful. And with an idea that we'll do it for 3 years, and then I think the plan even extended out to 5. The 3 years would be the initial commitment, and then we'll see how it goes from there.
I think it's important to note that commitment is our people that we currently have working for us just being reassigned to this building. So I think that's important. The commitment of rent and all the rest comes from the private foundation.
Supervisor Matisse.
Well, first of all, I want to praise everyone who supports on the victim abuse program. And I really believe that the Family Justice Center, with a co-location, has a lot of merit. I'm in full agreement with that. Although I still have a problem, I think the funding source is wrong, and you and I may differ on that. One thing is, I would imagine that many of the marital problems or children abuse or wife abuse aren't married. And so when we start trying to connect all this money together, I'd say maybe perhaps, I don't know what the percentages are, but I don't think it's a pure connection. The thing I'm concerned about is with the continual cutting of sources from Sacramento to the county, we're asking each department to make cuts in order that we can maintain and provide the service. We do provide this service. It's a matter of putting it into co-location and making it more convenient. And as I said, there's merit involved in that. But I really believe that monies generated from a department should be directly in relationship to the service it renders. And that's my concern. Because, and I'm not going to try to compare this to the state, but that's part of the problems we have with the state. Money that was committed for certain things or from certain departments, and then it was put in the general fund. And I don't want to get caught in that. I don't think Stanislaus County wants to be considered about raising money for various other programs, regardless what we may have our differences in the connection between the two. But what happens if we do that? We continue to ask the recorders, to reduce their budget, and we don't have money to address some of their needs or to continue various programs, whereby if we've committed this money to other things outside of that realm, where do we go to get the money to continue the service where the money was generated from? So that has been my problem. I am very supportive of the victim abuse program, but I do believe the source is not the correct source. And I know that perhaps we have a difference. But I do congratulate everyone involved in this, and I hope there's somewhere you can find a source. But I just don't agree with the source of funding.
If I could just for a moment, I believe that you just passed in your consent agenda an item that the clerk recorder put on about looking at the fees so that she can handle or work within her budget that we all have to work within in these next year or two. This, again, is not... We don't have the $2 fee that we're asking for right now.
Yes.
We're asking for the $2. We're asking for it to go to the Family Justice Center to aid victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, elder abuse, and child abuse. And all of those vital statistics do correlate to those victims. And I would ask that you think about the victims of violent crimes and these particular victims and the needs that they have and help us to serve them in a much more efficient manner so that it can lead down the line to savings not only to this county but to the community as well. And I think that will be the result that you will see by spending or by approving the $2 increase. You will receive back many more savings than that money.
My concern is, let's say, for example, things get worse, and I think this coming year is going to be very difficult. And we come back to Ms. Lundgren and ask that we need to cut even more than we thought originally. We have some programs that we're struggling to maintain, and yet we've committed money to expanding the program, and we're fighting just to survive to maintain programs. That's a concern I have. I'm not arguing with you at all at the benefits. I'm just concerned under this coming year, and I believe that those who believe last year was difficult, which I also believe, is going to find that last year was an easy year. And so I'm concerned about committing monies under these conditions to from certain departments over to other departments. And that's my concern. And my congratulations on your efforts.
Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, I'd also agree with Supervisor Monteith on this. I do have some problems with this funding source. You're taxing people who really have nowhere else to go but to get a birth or death certificate or marriage certificate from the county and then using that money for this program, for this nonprofit, for an unrelated service. At least an unassociated service. So if it's a good program, you know, we can fund it out of our general fund. But when we charge a fee, I always felt that we should never charge a fee higher than what the service is. And in this case, it's even worse than overcharging somebody a fee. It's taking the fee, overcharging for it, and then giving it to somebody else, no matter how good the program is. This type of funding is just something I'm opposed to. We just see it more and more these days, where you take the money from one thing and then just transfer it over to somebody else for just a unassociated service. So I'm going to oppose this.
Supervisor Chiesa.
I'm not sure I'm opposed to the fee. And whatever happens, don't think this is an attack on the Family Justice Center. I trust our committee, assignments. I like the way we do committees, and the chairman and Supervisor O'Brien are on the committee, and I have to trust you guys. And in this instance, I do trust you. I guess there just wasn't enough information that was transferred down, and that's why I'm uneasy about this. And
I know I've never done this before, but I was just wondering if anyone would be in agreement to staying this just for one meeting, just so I could, you could give me that information. I'd feel much more comfortable. I don't think it's so much the funding source. I just want to make sure, because you've been talking to Mrs. Foster and Mrs. Gonzalez and Assistant District Attorney Shipley about this, and you have a comfort level, and I just haven't reached that comfort level yet. But if it's the will to vote, I probably will be in support of this.
I appreciate that thought. We have had opportunity to look at a financial projection for the organization and a staffing projection several times, and it hasn't been to the full board. Would it be more appropriate that entire business plan was discussed here before we would vote on something like this? Would it be possible to do?
It would be possible to do it. One of the challenges that we're up against right now is the deadline for submitting new legislation, which is just around the corner, I believe, next week, if I remember right, isn't it, David? Yeah. And so we're working against a deadline. We could reasonably expect the legislator to get an amended bill sometime in mid-session, but that's a little more problematic in getting an author than starting from scratch with a new bill. So it would be my preference that you take action today on the matter before you, which will give us direction legislatively whether to pursue this, and then we can still bring back the management plan. We can have subsequent discussions if the board decides tonight not to support this, but wants to revisit when we bring the full package back to you. You certainly could do that, and we could take the alternative course of action, which would be to try to find a legislator willing to give up an existing bill to use as a vehicle for this.
Supervisor O'Brien, do you have a preference?
Do we meet next Tuesday, do we not? Is there a way we can hear it and still have time to get to our legislatures next week?
David, do you remember the exact...
Why don't you come forward, David, if you will, please.
You're probably researching it desperately on...
I'm leaving David Jones. I don't have the exact deadline. I'm trying to find that as quickly as I can.
We could come back and revisit this at the end of the meeting. Perhaps we can take just a few minutes and see if we can identify that date. I was thinking it was the third or fourth week of January for introducing the legislation.
Mr. Jones, when you find that date, could you somehow signal us that you have it?
Of course. Well, one last thought I had, Mr. Chairman, is domestic violence, by definition, is of the family unit. Abuse and neglect within the family unit. Just as we added on money for real estate transactions to attack real estate fraud, here is an attack on the family unit where we're attaching fees to vital records that happens to families, whether it's the birth of a child or you get married. So I think it's great correlation, just like it is for the mortgage fraud that this board endorsed. So I think we're on the right track. I think there is a correlation.
If I remember correctly, and I may be wrong, I want to clarify, but in the situation which you just brought up, didn't we put that in the general fund? It was an extra fee. It wasn't that passed through an extra.
It was an extra.
It wasn't through an additional fee, was it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
But that's exactly what this is. Yeah. Exactly the same thing.
Supervisor DeMartini, any final comment?
I don't see any correlation between the real estate fraud fee to battle real estate fraud and this. None. And you know that there isn't. And this is a nonprofit here that's just buying the tap in to the county treasury and then using the Board of Supervisors to force people to pay $2 more to go into this nonprofit. And that's what this is all about. If they can get private donations. We have a lot of programs for victims and people that suffer from abuse. I've been out into the field before and seen a lot of programs that we do. But this is just going a little bit too far for me. Correlation between real estate fraud and this is just, I just don't see it. And then taxing somebody $2 more for a death certificate to put into this thing is just a little bit more than I can take.
Okay. I don't think that we're going to talk until we come together. And I think at the risk of somehow endangering the support of the Family Justice Center, I think we should go ahead and vote on what is in front of us tonight. And with the commitment from the staff that you will come back around to each of the supervisors and make sure that we all understand everything there is to know about the Family Justice Center and the business plan that is being proposed.
And I would be happy to do that. It's my sense, just listening to the conversation, that if the vote today was to support moving forward with the Family Justice Center, given the information that I'm familiar with relative to the business plan that has been put together, the financial plan, it would be a 5-0 vote. The instant question is whether to proceed with legislation that would generate resources to help support that effort. And so I think that's a very good plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
We have a motion for approval of sponsoring this bill. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Motion is O'Brien, seconds Chiesa. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No?
No.
Okay, motion passes 3-2. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Next in front of us is item B6, which is a request to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to notify the City of Patterson that the county concurs with the city's proposed modifications to the West Patterson Business Park Master Plan and Development Agreement. Mr. Robinson.
Yes, the City of Patterson has been in extended discussions and negotiations with private members of the Patterson community and a local health care district on the appropriateness of the placement of a community health clinic at the West Patterson Business Park. As you'll recall, the County of Stanislaus and City of Patterson entered into an agreement under which the City of Patterson would be required, if they violated the terms of that agreement, to pay considerable sums of money to the County of Stanislaus. We have looked at the proposed uses that have been distributed by the City of Patterson. I had asked our Planning and Community Development Director Kirk Ford and County Council Jack Doring to review the proposals. We do not find them inconsistent with the intent of the agreement executed between the City of Patterson and the County of Stanislaus, which was principally to restrict or, in fact, prohibit residential development in a non-residential area. It is my recommendation to you that you do authorize me to notify the City of Patterson that the county does concur with the recommended uses for the West Patterson Business Park.
Any questions for staff? Anyone from the audience that would care to comment? Supervisor DeMartini, this is your area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very familiar with this topic, as this has been going on for a while in the City of Patterson. I'd like to see this letter sent out because this clarifies the county's position. And let me go back a little bit. The reason that this was put in is so that if the City of Patterson had ever put residential housing in the Keystone Business Park, they would have to pay back the road construction costs for Sperry Road and Baldwin Road. That was the reason this was put in, the poison pill. It did not mean that some minor changes to the developer agreement could be put in so that a healthcare district, which is a public entity, can buy their own building in this park. Certain medical things are allowed inside that park already, and this is a minor and almost insignificant change to the developer agreement. You can say, I want to really stress that the reason that Patterson would have to pay the county back for its construction of the roads is if they changed it over to residential housing, which at the time, you know, was a concern because there was nothing there at the time. There was no business park. And the promise was that the business park would go in Keystone, it would generate jobs, and that the county would build Baldwin Road over and make some improvements on Sperry Avenue. And it was, this was put in so that after the road was built, the city of Patterson couldn't go and then change it over to residential housing, and the county to foot the bill for this road construction. But it was never meant to be take effect over such minor changes to the developer agreement. So this letter the CEO's got is right on target.
Okay. Other comments from the board?
I would just make one clarification. The houses, more broadly defined as inconsistent uses, there are some other inconsistent uses, which could include, you know, junkyards and there are some other inconsistent uses. But principally, it was a focus on residential development and other uses that were not consistent with vibrant business park and industrial development.
Supervisor DeMartini, do you have a motion for us?
Yeah, motion to approve, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
Go ahead. Second, Supervisor O'Brien. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries 5-0. We'll then consider item E1, which is a request to approve and introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance relating to the regulation of nuisance noise.
Good evening, Mr. Booz. Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Goring. My name is Tom Bowes, Deputy County Counsel, and I'm here to present a proposed amendment to Stanislaus County Code Chapter 10.46 related to the regulation of nuisance noise. Several county departments were instrumental in helping put together this proposed amendment, including the Sheriff's Department, District Attorney, Planning and Community Development, and code enforcement. We've also had input from members of the public. I was looking for Mr. Castro. I don't believe he's here. In 2006, the county adopted the current noise ordinance, which is based on a subjective loud and raucous noise standard. The standard is found in many ordinances and throughout California. Even so, due to complaints about nuisance noise from residents and problems in enforcement of the existing laws, including the current ordinance, staff identified a need for a comprehensive set of regulations with measurable standards. We think the ordinance before you addresses this need. I'll just note that the proposed ordinance was presented to the Planning Commission, and they had favorable comments. That concludes my opening remarks. Are there any questions?
Yeah. Steve? Supervisor Monteith.
I understand the ordinance. I think it has merit. But there's two questions. Do we have the personnel to enforce it? Or are we just going to have another law in place that we have difficulty enforcing? Or is the enforcement only going to be upon notification and then people come out? Then how high a priority is it before they come out and take a look at it? That's my only concern.
Both of those questions would be best answered by the Sheriff's Department. The way it is written, the Sheriff's Department has primary responsibility for enforcement. There is a mechanism for code enforcement to enforce it through our County Code Chapter 2.92. However, I don't believe that would be very effective.
See, it's a priority. If they're busy and if we don't have the personnel to do it, it's on a lower level of priority. And does it then? I'm just interested how it's going to be put in force. I have no objection to the concept.
I understand your comments. I just don't have a good answer for you.
Supervisor DeMartini, Supervisor Monteith. We went looking for the sheriff in case he's still in the building.
Okay.
And if he comes back in, then we can ask that directly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This new ordinance is just a modification of the one that we passed in October of 2006. Virtually every city has some sort of noise ordinance, but in the county, up until 2006, we did not have one. This original ordinance came out of a request from the South Modesto MAC, and it really concerned mostly people playing really loud music at night and really disturbing the peace. So if you would have done that in the city of Modesto or Turlock, the police would have come out there to stop it. We didn't have anything in place for that. And so the ordinance was written, and the only flaw that we really found in it was that it was too subjective of how loud the music was or the noise. Somebody would say it was too loud, somebody could say it wasn't. And so the difference in this ordinance to the old one is that we use measuring devices to be able to measure how loud the sound is. So we have something to go by. And that's primarily the difference. Sheriff's Department would be the one who responds to this. They do now. It is not a priority call. They certainly have something going on that it's a real concern to them. They're not going to come out and about loud music, but you know they probably would eventually. It just depends on how busy they are. They do respond already. This would just give them a way to measure the noise, and a lower level of noise that would be allowed after 10 o'clock than before. I think the ordinance is reasonable, and it's just a modification of what we have already.
Jeff,
yeah, sure.
Right. Well, then basically what you're saying is this is a modification of something we already have in place. It's a clarification. So my question, we already have it in place. We're just trying to clarify the requirements now and upgrade it. So that basically answers my question.
Okay.
Thank you. Supervisor Chiesa.
This actually deals with one of what I find to be one of the biggest constituent complaints, and I think tightening it up is fine. I find it interesting because when you talk about the sound levels and how you rate that, I don't understand it, which is okay with me as long as you understand it, Tom. But sound level in decibels means 20 times the logarithm to the base 10 of the ratio of the pressure of the sound to the reference pressure that is 20 micropascals. I love that. So, that's an attorney right. One question would be, the folks, when they're getting a use permit of some sort, they go through sound, they have to do a sound study. And if they meet those requirements at the time and say they were allowed 100 decibels, which is really loud, I understand that. But if they were allowed that before, does that change now? Could it change?
What we've done with this ordinance is, in addition to applying a set of standards, we've tightened it up so that it is more aligned with the general plan. So those projects that are coming through now will and are approved after the ordinance will be consistent with the ordinance and that they are consistent with the general plan. For uses that are currently in use that were adopted prior to this current general plan, it's my feeling that they would be subject to this new ordinance. However, there are steps that a property owner could take if they felt that they had an issue and could apply for a waiver from the requirements of the ordinance and present that to the Planning Commission.
Sheriff, I see that you've come back into the room, and thank you for doing that. There were some questions earlier regarding the prioritization of noise ordinance complaints in the Sheriff's Department. Could you address your policy regarding that?
Well, our response policy to any nuisance call is the same, regardless of you know, whether it's for noise or anything else that potentially could be a nuisance to the community. I know that Supervisor DeMartini and I have done a considerable amount of work in this regard because of ongoing noise complaints in South Modesto in specific neighborhoods. And so the whole effort in putting this together was to try to develop a better ordinance than what we had previously that gives us an enforcement tool rather than just the previous ordinance, which really was unenforceable. So the difference here is that we've worked to provide the deputy sheriffs a tool to issue citations for repeated offenses in the event that just simply responding and asking people to turn down their music doesn't work. Most of the time it does. Many of these nuisance calls, our deputies respond. Again, there's no specific policy. We respond to everything we get a call on. It's the job of the watch commanders to prioritize those calls, but we do our best to respond. In this case, we typically go out, can you turn down the music? Most of the time people comply. If they don't or there's repeated offenses, now we have the ability to get somebody's attention through financial means and a citation and greater accountability than just ignoring the request to be courteous to your neighbors. Does that help?
Yes, thank you very much. That
you're
clarifies
welcome.
It. Thank
My
you.
Apologies for
That's okay.
Shooting out.
Hey, Sheriff Christian.
Thank you.
Can we hold further comments? I'm going to give anybody in the audience that came down to speak, if you want to come forward and do that. If you'll just state your name, we'd appreciate that when you start.
My name's Eva Jones. I'm a resident over off of Glendale Avenue, backside of property, commercial property. So I have to listen to Spinnaker's music. They leave the back door open, and then you start hearing cussing every other word on the song, and it's just booming through our house. I'd like to know how to solve these issues, because you call the police department, they can only respond so many times.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bowes, will this address those issues?
Do you live in Modesto or in Stanis?
I live in Modesto.
In Modesto. In your case, in your specific case, you would need to contact the Modesto PD. However, a homeowner in Stanislaus County, in one of our Stanislaus County enclaves, they would need to contact the Sheriff's Department. That's how they would start the process. That's how it would start.
Okay, but this addresses specifically loud music that interrupts homeowners in their homes, particularly after a certain period of time. And would you expect the City of Modesto's ordinance is equal or more stringent than what this one is?
No, it's not as stringent.
Not stringent, okay.
This, no. Ours, however, does apply. If you live in the county or if you have a industrial or commercial use in the county and it makes noise that traverses over into Modesto, then it would apply, our ordinance would apply to that, to where the noise is generated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ma'am, have you contacted the police department and have they come out and listened?
They've come out numerous times, but we keep calling because usually I go to bed around 8:30 because I have to get up by 4 o'clock because I have to drive to Livermore because I have a very stressful job. I do air traffic control. And it's like if they play until 3 in the morning, you can't get any sleep at all. And I work weekends, too.
Okay. There's an opportunity for you to address the council the same as you came to the board tonight, and I think that would be a good idea.
The council?
The city council that usually meets on Tuesday evenings at 5:30 in this chamber.
Okay.
Once a month we do it, but and let them know about your concerns and how it affects you, and my guess is you'll get some attention on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, even
if you know how to get in touch with me, okay. I'm walking.
Anyone else that we care to address the board here? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. And Supervisor Casey, did you have a...
I just have one more question on the waiver. It goes through our planning department, and I'm assuming that Mr. Bichette is going to be the authority on that. Does it go through the waiver when you apply for a waiver?
The waiver goes through the planning department. That would be Kirk Ford.
Mr. Ford, who's filling the
public works. There we go. Sorry, Kirk. I know. I'm sorry. Okay. The intent, because there was no maximum number of waivers that someone could apply for. And I guess the intent, everyone needs to know the intent, is not to, every weekend when you have a party and a band in your backyard, to come back in. And I would hope that's not the intent, although it's not stated.
No, the intent of the waiver is to allow for a use that is present and that is has been there for a while and that will necessarily violate the standards to be able to come in and present reasons why they cannot change or they cannot abate the noise and have a process whereby they can either increase the standard or be completely exempt from it.
So it's not specifically for a one-time event?
No, okay. That's not the intent.
Can you get a waiver for a one-time event? Or just those exemptions that were...
Theoretically, it would be possible, but I would doubt it would actually happen.
Okay.
Chair will entertain a motion.
A motion to approve, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion from Supervisor DeMartini, second from Supervisor Monteith. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Let's consider correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the American Lung Association regarding the release of the State of Tobacco Control Report.
Refer this to the Health Services Agency.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge the receipt of claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Under item 9, are there any Board of Supervisors reports? Okay, then 10, a legislative, fiscal, and management report from the Chief Executive Officer.
And the only thing I have to add this evening is in answer to the question that was raised earlier relative to bill deadlines, the bill request deadline is this Friday, which is the date we need to make a request of our legislators for the bill. The last day to introduce a new bill would be February 19th. And that would follow a legislator accepting the bill, the bill being drafted, sent to legislative council, and then returned to the legislature for introduction. So we needed to take that action today.
Okay, and then would you mind making the announcement?
I would be happy to. My pleasure. It is my pleasure to announce that the 2010 State of the County Address will be given by Chairman Jeff Grover next Tuesday, January 26, 2010, at 9 a.m. That will occur in the chambers here, basement of the 1010 10th Street here in Modesto.
Okay. Thank you. And this meeting stands adjourned.